From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello talks with author Robert Riley about his new book, Making Gay Okay. And Dan Burke discusses serving the poor and disenfranchised with the director of Martha's Village and Kitchen, Magdalena Andrasiewicz. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thanks again for joining us. Our first guest, Robert Riley, is a writer and senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. He was senior advisor for information strategy for the U.S. Secretary of Defense, after which he taught at National Defense University. Mr. Riley has served as director of the Voice of America. He also served in the White House as a special assistant to President Ronald Reagan. He has written widely on the War of Ideas issues, foreign policy, and classical music. His previous book is The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. Today he'll speak with Jeanette DeMello about his new book with the very provocative title, Making Gay Okay. Robert, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you. It's a delight to be with you.
Now, Bob, we are talking about your newest book, Making Gay Okay, with the subtitle, How Rationalizing Homosexual Behavior is Changing Everything. And indeed, we do see a lot of changes. We say 17 states and the District of Columbia allow same-sex couples to wed. Many states allow same-sex couples to adopt. We've seen changes in the military and in the Boy Scouts and their policies on allowing homosexuals to serve. And this is happening in many different arenas. We've seen a change in the policy in regards to homosexual behavior. How have we gotten to this place of such a huge shift?
Well, I think we've gotten there because of the dynamics of rationalizing sexual misbehavior. If you base your life upon something that's wrong, such as the act of sodomy, you have to invert reality in order to justify it and live with your own conscience. Now, that requires the universalization of the rationalization. In other words, it's not enough for you and your confreres to say gay is okay. You have to get everyone to do it. And if there are any holdouts, that threatens the integrity of your rationalization and may call you back to your conscience. So enormous amount of energy is invested in maintaining the rationalization and enforcing it and ensuring its spread. And that, as you just said, Jeanette, is why it has worked its way through every institution of American society and government, where it has now become the new norm. And the last man standing against this rationalization today is the church. And
that's
why it will become and has become the object of such vitriol, because it continues to testify to the truth about the meaning and purpose of human sexuality.
That's right. We have seen that that even the church, in some of its institutions, is really being faced with a challenge, and in some places, I don't think knows quite how to resist the advances. And I'd speak in this situation of a couple Catholic schools that we've heard of in the last few months who have faced sit-ins by students, outrage from parents, when the school has stood up for, in the case of Seattle Catholic High School, the school basically stood up for Catholic teaching on homosexuality, and the vice principal of the school resigned because he was in a same-sex marriage.
Right.
And, you know, parents and students were outraged, and now in Charlotte Catholic High, Nashville Dominican, Sister Jane Dominic spoke about the church's teaching and social science data about homosexuality and is now not invited back to speak at that school.
So, you know, it's going to get worse. And we had the firing recently of the CEO of Mozilla because years ago he had made a $1,000 contribution to the Proposition campaign in California, which was to amend the Constitution, making clear marriages between a man and a woman. So this is prohibited speech now. And adding to the energy of the enforcement of this homosexual rationalization is the fact that throughout the sexual revolution since the 60s, people have been rationalizing heterosexual misbehavior. So this this is sort of a self-reinforcing dynamic in this sense. It works like this. If you'll rationalize my sexual misbehavior, I'll rationalize your sexual misbehavior, no matter what form it takes. In this case, a sodomitical marriage. Now, the point is the everyone who is living within a rationalization of this kind understands that they're all interdependent. So if someone stands up and says, I'm sorry, but sodomy is an inherently disordered evil act and under no condition could be the basis of a marriage or anything else, you have to ask, well, why is that so? And that takes you back to both the unitive and procreative purposes of human sexuality. And once you start raising that question, all of the rationalizations for heterosexual misbehavior are under threat, too. So you see, it affects far more than the issue that's immediately at hand, and it's why the rationalization for homosexual behavior has conquered this country with such breathtaking rapidity, and it's because the foundation had already been laid by those other rationalizations.
This is Jeanette DiMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Robert Riley, about his book, Making Gay Okay, How Rationalizing Homosexual Behavior is Changing Everything. And, Bob, you just made a very important point, and that point was that when the institution of marriage or other misuses of sexual behavior has become widespread in society, then it's going to creep into other areas, and that's basically what has happened here with homosexuality. What would you pinpoint as kind of the start of this unraveling of our social ethic, of our moral ethics around sexual behavior?
Well, as I try to point out in the book, both in examining the Supreme Court decisions and in the philosophical logic of the progression, or I should say regression, of sexual behavior, it begins with the acceptance of contraception.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to see where the barrier is between the acceptance of contraception and the approval of homosexual behavior. I mean, if you accept the one, you put yourself in a very difficult position in not going all the way. And it's taken this country 40, 50 years to make that journey, but I'm afraid that the logic was inherent in that mm-hmm. first step. As you know, Jeanette, first contraception was accepted only for married couples, then for adults and children. And then if your contraception doesn't work and you conceive a child and you don't want it, then you can kill it.
Yeah,
so that abortion was somewhat implicit in the original acceptance of contraception. I think that's the key.
So this is the key to the breakdown. Now, what exactly should we be doing? I mean, obviously right now so much of the focus has been on, I guess, a culture war or a battle against same-sex marriage, and now there's so much acquiescence to it. But it sounds like we need to be doing a ton more in the rebuilding of marriage itself. What do you suggest those of us who want to see a return, or I guess the true meaning of marriage grasp again? What do we do?
Well, Jeanette, I think the first thing we have to do is tell the truth and refuse to comply with the enforcement of this new rationalization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to come at a high price. As one person said, to speak out on this issue is a career crusher.
Yeah.
You'll be punished. I mean, I don't have a career. I'm an older guy now, so it doesn't affect me in that respect. But I know it affects a lot of people. Curiously, when Ignatius Press was soliciting book squibs for Making Gay Okay, mm-hmm. the people who wouldn't do it, and some of whom said forthrightly, I'm sorry, I can't afford to do this. I can't
sure.
afford to be associated with this
sure.
because of the penalties involved. So this is going to take some courage. We've seen the Boy Scouts fold. We've seen the U.S. military fold, the government fold. We've seen the practice of psychiatry fold.
Right.
They've all acceded to this. Now, we now have to stand fast, true, and witness to this truth. This truth, if it's held, I think, Jeanette, will lead people back to the consideration of the fundamental nature of human sexuality and how its use properly leads to human flourishing in the family. Mm-hmm. And we can make that case, as I do in the book, just through reason and the laws of nature. I don't make one single appeal to religion in the book, precisely so it can't be dismissed as, well, this is a Catholic talking. No, I'm sorry, I am a Catholic, but I am speaking from the laws of nature.
Sure. Universal principles, so that we are,
exactly,
are basing this on the natural law, on our reason, what we grasp by reason, not on revelation. And that's the argument you're making. Now, you know, Pope John Paul II, who will be canonized very, very soon, had so many teachings on this, and his were both from the point of revelation, but also from natural law. Being a philosopher himself, he based so much on what we can attain by our reason. So I'm sure that he has offered you quite a bit of support as you've undertaken this hefty project. But I did want to ask you one question about a subject that you talk about in your book, and it's an important subject, and that is how science has basically contributed to this idea of homosexual behavior being acceptable. We just have a couple minutes left, but I think that's a big part of your book that readers should understand science as part of this.
Yeah, I thank you, Jeanette. It is an important chapter on sodomy and science, which shows the change in the American Psychological Association and the Psychiatric Association from having defined homosexuality as a psychological disorder to approving it. Now, how did that change take place? Was it through the development of new research and the evidence from that research? It wasn't. It was developed both inside and outside the American Psychological and Psychiatric Association by a homosexual lobby that pushed this rationalization. And as many of the homosexual psychiatrists at the time said, this was done through force majeure and was not the result of science itself. And it was the first time a scientific judgment on a psychological, psychiatric issue had been overturned by something other than science. So it wasn't science. It was the suborning of science to conform with the rationalization of this sexual misbehavior.
Well, Bob,
Jeanette, as you know, by the way, that is being used in courts today, as it was
right.
in Michigan last month, to overturn the state constitutions that marriage is between a man and a woman, because they claim now that the official science is that it makes no difference to children whether they have biological parents or are raised by lesbians or homosexuals, which is utterly false.
Well, there is so much at stake in this battle. We're very grateful for what you've written. I've heard many people saying that this is just really the number one book to read if you want to understand the history of this issue. You can get this book at Ignatius.com, Ignatius.com. We invite you to go there to order this book and to read it and to join Bob Riley in his work, taking this message and bringing it forward that we might understand marriage more fully and what is going on in our society. Bob, thank you so much for being with us today. We hope to talk to you again sometime.
Thanks, Jeanette. Reason is on our side and nature is on our side. We can win this.
Amen.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
When we return, we'll talk with Magdalena Andrasiewicz about serving the poor and disenfranchised. Certainly a great topic for us to explore as we prepare for Holy Week. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Dr. Ray Guarendi talks about the National Catholic Register.
The Register is catechetical news. In other words, it teaches the news from the perspective of the catechism. And you can learn all kinds of good things about the church and faithful living through the Register. They cover a wide, wide range. Catechesis, explaining the faith, what's going on in the world, in the Vatican, good, solid Catholic journalism. The Register helps people cut through the spin. There's no spin in the Register. It is faithful Catholic teaching, analyzing of the news from a Catholic perspective.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. With Jeanette DiMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Magdalena Andrasiewicz, is executive director of Martha's Village and Kitchen. A native of Redondo Beach, California, Magda earned a Master of Public Administration degree with emphasis on healthcare services and nonprofits from the University of Missouri, Kansas City. She moved to the Coachella Valley 8 years ago. Magdalena was named executive director of Martha's last August. Her goals include raising the awareness of Martha's in her community and more affiliation with area businesses, not only for funding, but also for job contacts for those in need of Martha's services. Magda, welcome to Register Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really pleased to share our story with you, so thank you for inviting me.
Magdalena, this is Dan Burke. It was one of the great privileges of my recent traveling adventures around the United States to stop off in the Coachella Valley there and visit Martha's Village and Kitchen. Now, we've covered Martha's Village in the National Catholic Register, and it was obviously a very interesting story for me. I wanted to see it in person. And wow, what an amazing work that you all are doing out there. The work of corporal works of mercy, of feeding the hungry and getting them back on their feet and helping them to recover from amazing challenges in their life, just things that none of us would want to face. So I'm grateful for all the work you do there, but let's talk about specifics and just give a general overview of the ministry of Martha's Village and Kitchen and how it is that you serve those that come to you and need help.
Well, thank you so much for coming. We enjoyed having you on our campus to share all the things that we do and really to let all the folks know in the community and elsewhere what we do, because we all always welcome any type of talent and expertise that folks can offer us. We serve roughly 6,000 homeless folks in the county of Riverside. So in the Coachella Valley, it's a great number of homeless individuals. And what we do at Martha's Village and Kitchen, we offer not only meals and a place to sleep, but we offer services such as case management to help one maneuver through if they need a GED, any type of adult education classes, any job-seeking skills, how to put together a resume, how to present oneself in an interview. And we have children's services for those folks that come to us with families, that are families with children. We have different classes for them from 0 to 5 years old. We also have health care provided at our facility through mental health specialists and recovery services, dental, as well as I had mentioned the food that we serve, as well as being a place to sleep. It's really a comprehensive facility in which we're trying to ensure that one, through no fault of anyone, you know, they came upon some times in which they need some help and encouragement. And we're here to provide that for them through these services and hope to ensure that we're doing what we can to get them back on their feet.
And it certainly seems that you're doing that. If we could, it might help our listeners to describe the kinds of people that come in. So I'll give it a shot, and then you can add a little bit. So on one hand, you have folks who come there every day, and then they leave, and they come to get food, and they leave. About how many people like that do you feed every day and then throughout the year who wouldn't otherwise be able to eat?
Yes, we do. So not only the folks that stay at our facility, but the community at large, anyone can walk through our doors and have a meal every day of the week, 7 days a week, a lunch meal. And we serve approximately 300 daily. Over this year, we were a little higher in the numbers, which, of course, that's not good when you see this increase in numbers, but 250,000 meals per year. So the numbers are quite high, but we do. We serve very, very nutritious meals and very tasty. We have all the fruits and vegetables, and we have an incredible crew that puts together great meals with the volunteers. So, yes, we not only serve our clients that stay with us, the residents, but we also are open to the entire community.
So that's one kind of constituency that you serve. Another kind might be the case of a wonderful lady I met while I was there. Her name was Jackie Barella.
Yes, she had no place to live, and here she came with her children. And she was so excited by everything that she was able to learn through our program, recovery services, those that have addictions, and folks needing just help with even education. So having these opportunities available in children's services where the children are also learning or watched, in essence, where the mother and the father can look for work and also attend these classes, so it allows them to do that while their children are in our children's services program. So with all of that, Jackie said many, many times during her stay as a resident, said, I just have to come back here and work at Martha's. You all have done so much. It is going to be my mission to come back here and work and give back. She is one of our case managers at Martha's Village and Kitchen, and she is just incredible. She can relate to everybody because she's walked in their shoes.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking with Magdalena Drazovitz about this wonderful work of Martha's Village and Kitchen in the Coachella Valley in California. And our staff writer, Joseph Pronichin, wrote an article that you can read in the Register about this work entitled You Cared for Me. And we also have another piece on Martha's Village there, too. And we're just talking about a woman named Jackie, who is now a caseworker there. Now, when Jackie came to you, she had been on drugs since she was a teen. She had not worked for years, but she had hit the streets, right? She had no place to go.
Yes, no place to go. And we were able to provide that safe environment for she and her children, and also a place in which she was able to work on the addictions that she had through our recovery services. And not only do we have these services available on our campus, but we also refer out to other organizations to help folks as well. So even if we may not be able to do something, we certainly collaborate with the community and refer to entities that would be better suited to help one.
I was really taken by Jackie's story in that she's on the street, doesn't know where to go, is at her last ends, but decides that she's ready to make a change. She comes into you, and you don't greet her just with food, as we've been talking about. So you provide her with a place that she can live to get her feet under her. You provide her with drug treatment services. You provided her with child care. And then once she begins to get clean and really completely away from the drugs and is complying with the program well, you begin to train her on how to get her grammatical skills and her communication skills. Is it up to a ninth grade level?
Yes, that's true. We do. We want to make sure everyone that comes through, if they're not at that level, to at least be at that level so that they'll be, in essence, at everyone else's level as far as being able to read applications and job-seeking skills and just in the workforce itself to be at that level.
So you have a rule that they have to be out for at least a year and show themselves to be self-sufficient. This was such a heartwarming story. So she's out for a year. She's fully employed. She's taking care of her kids and her own housing, and she's living a clean life. She's living a life that's honoring to the Lord. And then she comes back to you and says, I want to help people the way that you helped me. That's so powerful.
That is so heartwarming for all of us to actually see the transformation occur and to have somebody come back and give so much, not only to Martha's Village and Kitchen and our staff and such, but to the community, to actually be that individual who's encompassed all of those things that the folks that walk through our door, she can absolutely relate to in every way because she was that person.
It was amazing to sit there with her former case manager, and now she's a case manager helping other people. Tell us if folks are feeling like they need to give more in this season of Lent, where almsgiving is such a big part of our spiritual discipline. I couldn't think of a better organization to give to that really is doing amazing work out on the streets and helping people get off the streets. Where can they find out more about Martha's Village and Kitchen?
Well, we welcome you to go to MarthasVillageandKitchen.org, www.Martha's Village. Even if you brought up Martha's Village, it should come up. But MarthasVillageandKitchen.org, or you may call us at 760-347-4741. Like I said, we really cannot do any of this without all the wonderful support of the donors that we, the donations that we receive from both community members, from local and federal agencies. We couldn't do this without all this wonderful support. So we have to, you know, it's something that I am very passionate about, is thanking everyone for their incredible support for us to continue to do what we're doing.
Can you repeat that one, the phone number one more time, Magdalena?
Yes, that's 760-347-4741.
Great, great. Well, Magdalena, thanks for all that you do, and please express a hearty appreciation and love from those of us at EWTN, the National Catholic Register, for all the important work that you do for folks who are in the worst periods of their lives, where it seems hopeless, and instead of having a hopeless existence, you really help them to see, have a future and a hope, and be able to see a way out of that kind of misery and despair and homelessness. So thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Don't forget, you can listen to the show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for that microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. We'll be off next week because it's Good Friday, but we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.